everybody, and
hi.
Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we explore a new aspect of UFOs and the Paranormal. And tonight, our guest is Wilma Davidson, and we're going to talk about her book, Spirit Rescue. Actually, the full title is Spirit Rescue, A Simple Guide to Talking with Ghosts and Freeing Earthbound Spirits. But now before we talk with Wilma and before I introduce her, I'm just going to give you about 5 minutes of some UFO news and some current issues of what's going on today in the world. So let's see, what do we got? In Illinois, the Moline Dispatch in Illinois printed an article on March 28, 2007, this year, about a woman who claims to have seen a UFO. Now, at first she thought it was something ordinary in the sky. As she says, she pulled out of her driveway, and she noticed it. She thought it was an airplane that was very low in the sky. Her name is Teresa Sinclair, and she's 58 years old. And this was actually on March 23rd at 6:30 a.m. And Mrs. Sinclair was on her way to her job at the Rock Island Arsenal. What she saw through the open window of her car was a triangular-shaped craft with bright red, green, and white lights along its edges. Now, normally you would think that that's a conventional craft having red, green, and white lights, but it was triangular-shaped, and this object appeared to be directly over a high-rise building at the intersection of 10th Street and Crosstown Avenue. Now, the witness wasn't able to say exactly how far away this object was, or how large it was, but it appeared to be very large, and she had to look away because she was driving, and when she looked up again, it was moving this time, and she said it just zipped right over head and moved very, very quickly across the sky, and she got out of her car, and at this point, the object was gone, and it only lasted maybe 3 or 4 minutes, but she never heard anything. And she is totally convinced that this was a UFO. Now, local and federal authorities were actually notified, and they said that they received no reports of anything out in the sky. But Ms. Sinclair, she's convinced, as she says, I'm quoting, "I was just so taken aback by it." Of course, she's gotten a lot of jokes about little green men, but she says, "You laugh, but strange things happen." So it's lots of stuff going on. There's another sighting actually taking place in England, which is actually a series of sightings. Where is it actually taking place? Over Dumfries in Scotland. Excuse me. A mother and daughter saw a UFO, and it's the third sighting this month. Debbie Easton and her daughter Imogen witnessed objects in the sky last Thursday. And apparently they were driving along Glasgow Street at around 8:30 p.m. when they saw four strange lights. Two of them were together, and the other two seemed to fly across the sky to join them. So there were four of these, and they were all round-shaped. And at first I thought they were jet fighters, but the witnesses have been to air shows and said that there was definitely nothing like that. And they were estimated to be about a few hundred feet in the sky, but there was not a sound to be heard, and as they watched, they just seemed to fizzle out and disappear as if someone had switched them off. So it's another sighting. It's very interesting. According to actually the MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, has released its statistical report for March 2007, and the United States, of course, leads the number of reports in the world with 204. With 10 coming from Canada, and 2 from England, 3 from Australia, 3 from Brazil, and the others are very scattered, 238 reports total. In the United States, of course, it's California again, which seems to lead the nation with 31 reports. And I'm still not sure why California has so many reports over other states, but it's very consistent. And let me see, what do we got going on here in terms of entities, which I always find very interesting. There are 19 landings, hoverings or takeoffs and 24 entities reported from last month. And here's an interesting actual case which took place in Santa Rosa, Argentina. Now, this is translated from the Hispanic Journal of Ufology by Scott Corrales, and this occurred in the first days of January, like 4-4 of 2007, and the witness is anonymous. She's a 31-year-old lady who lives in the outskirts of Santa Rosa, and at 2:30 a.m., she was in the bedroom with her son. They were both sleeping when suddenly they saw a very bright light coming through into their window, and at the same time they saw a very tall person. And now the lady pretended to be asleep, and she did not lift her head from the pillow, but reached for her cell phone to get help. But at this point she became paralyzed and was unable to move, and two beings entered the room and appeared to do some sort of weird operation on her son. And at this point, the witness, Mrs. B, also felt like some sort of operation was being done unto her, into the back of her head, actually, and into her back, where her kidneys are. And this lasted for about 10, 20 minutes and eventually slowed down, and she never lost consciousness. And at one point, the entities finally left, and Mrs. B woke up, and she felt very sore, and she woke up her son, and they weren't able to find any evidence other than the soreness on their bodies. But it was a very strange case, and what's strange is before this event, the witness had a very irregular period, and now she's menstruating very regularly, and she was unable to get pregnant and had a series of miscarriages, and apparently this has had some sort of a very major influence on her health. So these kinds of cases are continuing to occur, and it's all very real. But let's get to our guest tonight. Wilma, are you there?
Yes, I am. You're a bit faint. I don't. Is there any way to improve the sound slightly?
Well, can you hear me better now?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Well, let me introduce you now. Okay. Tonight our topic is Spirit Rescue, a simple guide to talking with ghosts and freeing earthbound spirits. And our guest is Wilma Davidson. Now, do you believe in life after death? What happens when we die? Do people become ghosts or earthbound spirits? Our guest tonight, Wilma Davidson, knows firsthand about ghosts. From centuries-old battlefields to present-day disasters, Davidson has coaxed countless earthbound spirits, including confused children, loyal soldiers, malevolent entities, and even stubborn Titanic passengers, bringing them all to the other side, to the light. Davidson's own experiences and research bring warmth, honesty, and humor to this taboo subject of death. And tonight, we will discuss many of her extraordinary experiences of dealing with people on the other side. And we will discuss also an entire cross-section of paranormal events, including spiritual healing, psychic protection, dowsing, astral travel, and more. And Davidson, I hope, will also provide advice for others who wish to access different dimensions and develop their own psychic abilities and their connection to the spirit world. Our guest, Wilma Davidson, has been researching the paranormal for a long time and is the author of the book Spirit Rescue, A Simple Guide to Talking with Ghosts and Freeing Earthbound Spirits. She currently lives in England, and her website is www.wilmadavidson.com. Wilma, thank you for joining the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's wilmadavidson.co.uk.
Oh, okay. Wilma Davidson. Well, that's important. WilmaDavidson.uk.
Yeah, co.uk.
Co.uk. Okay. Yeah. So, Wilma, did you always believe in ghosts growing up?
No, I didn't. I was sort of adult before I began to realize. it wasn't until I became a healer that I became aware of energy, and that's when I became interested in spirits and ghosts.
Oh, really? So when was your first experience?
My first experience was when I was sitting in a development circle. I had been married for 28 years, and my marriage broke down unexpectedly, and I didn't know what to do with myself, and I saw an advertisement in the paper for an astrologer, and I thought, oh, I will have my stars then. And this gentleman told me that I was going to develop my psychic abilities, and so I joined the development circle, and that's where I learned about rescue work, because sometimes the light of the circle would draw in lost spirits. So I then became interested in it. And of course, what happens when you go on a spiritual pathway is you seem to be led to the right direction. And
Right. Obviously,
I was meant to do this sort of work.
How interesting. The psychic told you that you were going to be doing this work. Well, you believed him?
No. No, I didn't. Because I had always worked in marketing and advertising, and really was never terribly sympathetic to anybody who was ill or who was interested in strange things. So it was a complete turnaround.
Right.
And I started off by going to a 6-week beginner's healing course, which was one night a week for 6 weeks, and there was 10 in the course, and we were put into pairs and told how to do healing, and we were told simply to put our hands out and mentally ask our creator to use us as a healing channel. And I was given this gentleman who had just come out of Reading prison, so I was a little bit apprehensive about the whole thing anyway. And I had the job of healing this gentleman, and I discovered that when I held my hands out, the energy just poured through them, and it was almost like concentrated needles and pins. And that was the sort of opening up of the healing channel. And once I realized that I could do it, I then went and did the 2-year training with the National Federation, because I thought, if I'm going to do it, then I may as well be qualified, because in this country you cannot be qualified unless you're insured. They're all sort of together. Because once I started healing, I learned the feel of energy. I became aware of energy. And I was drawn to study geopathic stress, which is the energy that rises from underground water, which affects a lot of people's health.
So what's it like to... What is it like to feel this energy that you're talking about? I mean, you said it feels like pins and needles?
Yeah, it's a vibration that's round about you. It's difficult to explain it. It's just that you sense that, you know, you feel different. There's a sort of, it can be just a like a cold air, or sometimes it's just a more powerful energy that seems to sort of envelop you.
Right.
And you become very tuned into it. It's one of these things, when you first start doing healing, you don't know what you're supposed to be feeling. Or if you're giving somebody some healing, you know, you will say to them, can they feel anything? And of course, they don't know what they're supposed to be feeling. So... They don't recognize it, and it's a sort of gradual thing that you sort of instinctively know when there's other different energies around.
Right. How interesting. So, what were some of your first really dramatic experiences when you were doing this development? I mean, you must have seen a lot of really amazing things.
Well, yes, when you sit in a development circle, and the idea of a circle is it teaches you the basics of spiritual development. And
okay.
It teaches you how to protect yourself, because psychic protection is really important. And it teaches you to sort of link into other people. And you start off in a very small way, and you're always taught that whatever you see or hear, you must give the message to that person. No matter how ridiculous it may feel. Because when you're first starting, you're not really very confident. And of course, you see something, you think, oh, it's my imagination. And one of the things you learn is that, you know, it is not your imagination. You must say it, because it can mean something. And I can remember many years ago sitting, linking into the lady opposite me. being shown the black and white minstrels. And I thought, why am I got this metal? It's my imagination. Anyway, I told her, and she was delighted and said her grandfather had been a black and white minstrel. So that made me realize that no matter how ridiculous something appears, you know, that to somebody else it can be quite sensible.
Right.
And the following week, with the same lady, I got the Lone Ranger and Tonto, and I thought, what on earth am I doing with this? Because this was a middle-aged lady who only had a daughter, so wouldn't have been interested in this sort of television program. Anyway, I gave the message as directed, and she told me that the little boy next door was having a birthday party, and she was making the birthday cake in the shape of the Lone Ranger and Tonto. So this is the sort of thing that you learn, and you know, once you realize that what you pick up sometimes about somebody, you know, does make sense or give them comfort. And
wow.
From there, you then go on and learn about things like dancing. And in the 6-week beginner circle that I went to, they taught us to dance and how to lie the person on the bed and put the pendulum across their body. And the pendulum would swing when it got to an area where there was a problem. And that was sort of my sort of first experience of the pendulum.
So you've
because you start off by learning a little bit of each of these subjects, and you find that you instinctively know which ones interest you. So some of them you discard, and others you home in and start reading up frantically and learning a bit more about them.
So you've experimented with dowsing, with the pendulum, with healing, and with mediumship, right?
Dancing is very useful in that it will tell you if there's a spirit presence. It will also tell you how long the spirit has been in the building. It will tell you the sex. And if perhaps it had been a member of the family, or if it was somebody who had been in service, perhaps a maid or something like that. Or alternatively, it could be someone who had been murdered, or someone who had been on the site in a building many, many years ago, which had been demolished, perhaps by war or any other cause, and so it could have been there for quite some time. So dancing is fascinating. In fact, I've just written a book on dancing, which has been published in the summer, telling people how to do this sort of thing. Yes, because once you know how to dance, you know, you can check to see whether there's fluoride in your water or whether the artificial sweetener is damaging your children's health or whether your microwave oven is sort of altering the molecular structure of your food. You can do anything like this once you learn to dance. So it's a very useful tool. And, of course, it's a wonderful way of keeping the children entertained by hiding some sweets in the garden and sending them off to Dallas to find us.
So is it accurate then, would you say, how accurate it is?
Yes, it's about 90%, I think. Because one of the skill with dancing is asking the correct question. You know, you have to ask the question properly, because sometimes there could be two different answers.
It also depends on the user, right? I mean, if someone is good at it or not.
Yes, it depends on the user in the sense that if the user is very negative, then the pendulum will have negative energy, so it will give you the wrong answer. So the only important thing is that, you know, the person has positive energy.
Right.
And, you know, is reasonably well balanced. And this is why, you know, if you are dancing, it's really quite important to put a light of protection around you before you start, and also to cleanse the pendulum. Now, pendulums, particularly crystals, which are popular these days, they do pick up negative energy. And so it's really quite important to cleanse it to make sure it gives you the correct answer. You can do this by sending a white light, mentally sending a white light through the pendulum, or running it in water, so preferably with some sea salt or something like that in it. But again, it's all about intent. And if you intend it to be cleansed, then it will, because the power of intent, as you know, is very powerful.
Right.
So
right.
It's all quite simple.
So your book, Spirit Rescue, what inspired you to write this?
I found that when I was talking to people about spirits, I was amazed at how many people would say, oh, yes, I used to live in a house that had a spirit, or I worked in an office where there was a spirit, or my granny had one in her house. And
right.
I didn't realize that there were so many people who actually had an experience of a spirit presence, but who never actually mentioned it. And I began to realize it was really much more common. And also, you know, that there was a problem, because if there's a lot of spirits around, then it's quite important to move them on their journey so that they progress.
Right. Also, you're saying that people wanted to keep their ghosts around? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think some people would say to me, oh, it's quite friendly ghost, it doesn't bother us. But it's not really doing the spirit any good staying in this sort of in-between worlds area. Because the idea is, after death, we move on to a new vibration and, a new beginning. So it's sensible to move them on. Because
right,
the tarot card, you know, the death card is a new beginning. And this is what happens when we die. Life goes on.
Right, that's exactly what you're saying, because I've actually investigated a lot of ghost encounters myself, and there aren't none of these people who live in these haunted houses are actually trying to move the spirits onto the light. So what is an earthbound spirit? What makes
an earthbound spirit? Is the spirit of a person who has died and not moved on to the next stage. I mean, there is an in-between area between life and the next phase, which is a sort of, it's just a void. And it's a place where people will often stay while they're just looking to see what's happened at their funeral, or that the will's been read to their satisfaction, and then they move on. But there are other people who say, and I'm sure we've all met people who in life are adamant that death is the end. You know, no way is there heaven or anything else. When you die, that's it. So, of course, if this is your expectation, then that's just what happens. When you die, you believe that this is where you stay. So you get people who are just there because they've been very bigoted. You get others who are there because they've perhaps done something wrong, and they feel that they won't be allowed into heaven because of their wrongdoings.
So it's their own self-guilt.
Right?
It's their own self-guilt that's keeping them earthbound?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. There's others who are there because if they've been living in a building that had geopathic stress, often this powerful negative energy which rises in a line, it can block them. So you find that buildings that have geopathic stress is often trapped spirits there.
What is geopathic? What is geopathic stress?
Geopathic stress is negative energy which rises from many hundred feet under the ground, from underground water. And the rays that come from the water, on the way to the Earth's surface, they get contaminated by faulty electromagnetic lines and various other contaminations, so that by the time they reach the surface, they are very powerful negative lines. And there's been a lot of research done in Europe on this subject, proving that illness is tied in with exposure to this energy. And people who sleep over it, it weakens their immune system. And people can have actually more than one stream crossing under the house, because, of course, what happens is you get different streams crossing at different levels. You know, one can be 500 feet under the ground, and another one 600 or 700 feet, and they're going in different directions. But you can have several of these lines rising from under your home, and if they just happen to rise under your bed, then it will affect health. And this goes back, the knowledge of this goes back before the war, as in 1929, a gentleman called von Paul, he doused a complete village in Austria, and he checked every house and marked on the map the houses where they had underground streams crossing. And they checked the medical records of the village for 20 years, and all the people in the village who had died of cancer had all lived in these houses where the streams were crossing.
Wow.
And in Germany, a doctor there, over a period of several years, checked 5,000 cancer patients and found they all had this energy in their body. And in some parts of Germany and Austria, you cannot buy a house until it has been checked for this energy. And builders building in that part of the country, they must guarantee that the sleeping areas that they're building are free from this energy. So it is recognized in some areas as being a health hazard.
Well,
but that is very much linked. It is linked to earthbound spirits.
How can someone check to see if they have this type of energy going on at their home?
You can check with a pendulum. There are people who will check, but you know, any dowser will check for you, but it's the sort of thing you can do yourself. All you have to do is have something on a piece of string, as long as it's heavy enough to swing, and you mentally ask to be shown your yes sign, which might go in a circle, clockwise or anti-clockwise, or back and forwards. And then once you know your yes sign, you ask your no sign, and then you can ask the question. But you know there are signs that geopathic stress is present. Often you'll get ants coming into the house, or you'll find that there's a certain area where your dog won't sleep. So you get little symptoms, and you find that you waken up feeling tired. You hear people saying, I never seem to be able to get my motor started, I'm always tired. And quite often, this is the presence of geopathic stress.
Wow.
So there you go. So I've actually got a little bit about that in the book.
So how does that relate to ghosts?
Well, because it's a negative energy, and a lot of spirits are negative, but they get trapped in this negative energy and aren't able to release themselves.
Oh, okay. So that causes a haunting?
Yes. Now, there is a difference between an earthbound spirit and a ghost, in that a ghost is a memory imprint. It is simply a memory that's been caught in time and repeats itself. You know, like the headless rider that people report seeing, or the lady in the ball gown who runs across the garden at 5 o'clock every evening. That is a ghost. It's simply a memory print that is replayed. Whereas a spirit is actually the spirit of a person who has died.
Ghosts then aren't really aware, and they're not people. It's just sort of a memory.
No, I mean, we talk about spirits as ghosts, but in actual fact, a ghost, the correct definition of a ghost is it's a memory imprint,
okay.
Whereas a spirit is something which is present and can move about and go from one room to the other.
No, and you can tell the difference. You can tell the difference between.
You've gone faint again.
You can tell the difference because ghosts repeat over and over again, whereas spirits are aware of you.
Yes, a ghost will often make themselves their presence felt. You know, perhaps they will move something in the room, or you will feel somebody pushing you, or just, you know, small things happen, that the clock has moved or the picture moves, and you know when you've got a spirit presence, whereas you don't know with a ghost. Because a ghost is just a picture of something you see. And you can often feel a spirit. You just feel a coldness, or you sense that you're being watched. But it's quite difficult to describe, because different people feel different things. But it's subtle. So you begin to think perhaps it's your imagination.
Right.
But in this book, I have described different things about the spirits. You know, you can smell them sometimes. They will give a smell to let you know they're there. Other times, they'll just alter vibration, so the room feels different. And some of these spirits have been here a very long time. So they are keen to move on. And simply by talking to them, you can help them to move over. And I find that if I'm aware that there is a spirit in a building, I usually send white light and healing to them to calm them down. Because, of course, when a person dies, they still can hear. The spirit can still hear. So if you talk to them, they can actually hear you. So you have to watch what you say. But the spirit hears what you think. So you can talk to them mentally. You don't have to speak out loud. But you can talk to them and say to them, it's time to move to the light. The friends are waiting for them. And their family are up there, and often that will be enough to make them go. And you do get some that are very bloody-minded. You know, they're people who have been difficult in life. And, of course, you don't change when you die. The temperament that you had when you were alive is very much with you. So somebody who is very cantankerous and obstinate, when they die, they're just the same. So you find people like that, they're quite difficult to move on because, they don't sort of take kindly to the idea that you're trying to help them.
Right.
It's your fun to talk.
Well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Wilma Davidson, and we're talking about her book, Spirit Rescue, A Simple Guide to Talking with Ghosts and Freeing Earthbound Spirits. Now, people can get your book on Amazon.com UK?
Yes, and Borders and quite a few of the well-known bookshops also carry stock.
Okay, and what's your website again?
It's Wilma Davidson, WilmaDavidson, WilmaDavidson.co.uk.
Okay, WilmaDavidson.co.uk. And
yes.
People can get more information about your books and your research there.
Yes, and they'll find it on Amazon easily, and they can deliver it very quickly.
All right. Now, in your opinion, can ghosts hurt people? Are they dangerous?
No. No, they won't sort of violently hurt you.
Or, I mean, spirit.
They won't sort of violently hurt you. What they will do occasionally is they get very frustrated because, you can imagine their frustration, because the spirit can see you, but you can't see them. And, of course, sometimes they don't realize they're dead. And a spirit will be most upset because you're ignoring them. I had a case recently where a very elderly lady found that she was being tripped as she walked across her kitchen. Something would make her fall and that she would be pushed. And I found that it was her late husband. And he told me that he was very upset because she kept ignoring him. And each time he tried to speak to her, she just turned away. But, of course, this poor lady couldn't see him.
And he didn't know he was dead?
Yes, he hadn't realized he was dead. I mean, this does sometimes happen.
That's astonishing to me. It's hard for me to believe that someone would not realize that they're dead, but I guess if you don't believe...
Yes, I agree, but it does seem to happen that some people... Because I think the reason for this lesson is because the mind lives on, you know, so they can still think
and
feel and see. And this particular gentleman, he was pushing his wife, and he wasn't intentionally hurting her. He was just desperately trying to draw her attention to the fact he was there and wanted her to speak to him. But I've never come across anybody being hurt by a spirit. So there isn't anything to fear. It's just the thought, I think, that there is this invisible thing round about you. And, of course, you don't know where it is. But it won't hurt.
Right. Well, that's why I always tell people that, you know, spirits are just people, and there really is nothing
to
be afraid of. And
no, I mean, they're people that you've, some of them will be people you've known in life.
Right. They need help. A lot of them are, you know, actually looking for help, I believe.
Most of them are. I mean, if you're sitting in a development circle, the light from the circle that's given out from the circle draws them in. So you'll get spirits coming into the development circle for help. And then the circle will sort of send them to the light. But I find that some of them, they're afraid to go to the light, so they often need to be coaxed a bit. So I usually ask their guide mentally for permission to tell a white lie. And I will then coax them. You know, I had one gentleman who was making a nuisance of himself and upsetting his wife, and my spirit helper told me that he had been in the military. So I told this man that if he hurried up to the light, his regiment were having a reunion, and that he was making fun, and he went very quickly. And I find this is the secret. But I always ask permission before I tell a white lie. But sometimes you are doing people a favor, the spirit a favor, by helping them onto the next phase. So sometimes you have to cajole them a bit.
That's very, very clever. Now, you had an experience involving a Titanic passenger, is that true?
Yes, that was very strange, because I do link into disasters quite regularly to see if there's any stray spirits there, because sometimes you'll find that most of the spirits will go, but there'll be the odd one that stayed there for some peculiar reason. And I had checked the Titanic several times and found that it was all right. And then something made me go back again, and I found that there were still some there, and there were three people there who refused to move, and I couldn't get them to go at all. And then I discovered that they had a limousine in the hold. Now, I didn't know that they had limousines in the hold in the Titanic, but this is what the spirits told me, that they had a limousine, and they couldn't go without their limousine. So when you get a case like that, you simply tell them there's a new one waiting for them at the light. And I have done this with some young men that have been killed in a motorbike accident, a motorcycle. You know, I've said there's a lovely new cycle up there. And that's the sort of thing that will get them to go. But the Titanic, yes, there were people there. And there was another couple who wouldn't go because all their jewellery was in the safe. And I told them just to open the safe that it was unlocked and take it with them. And they went. But you find you do get the odd ones who are there for some peculiar reason. And it's often something to do with the way they've lived. You know, if they've been very materialistic in life, then they don't change when they die.
Right. So people are just attached in some way or another. They're attached to material goods or to their home or something like that.
Yes, people who have been like that in life are just the same in death.
Now, what about out-of-body experiences? What do you think about that subject?
About?
Out-of-body experiences. What do you think about astral travel?
Yes, out-of-body experiences do happen, and you can actually go and learn how to do it if you're interested. It's actually very common, and if you care to look on the internet, under astral travel or out-of-body experiences, there are many, many thousands of websites and so much information there. So anybody who, I've got a chapter on the book on it, but anybody who's interested, I would advise them to have a look on the web, because there is just so much there. And there is an organization where you can go and learn, and they will send information to you. So yes, out-of-body is. And the other thing is near-death experiences. Now, you get a lot of people, when you raise the subject, will tell you about their experiences. But the funny thing is, people don't usually volunteer it. But when you raise the subject, it's amazing how many people will say, oh, yes, you know, I had this situation when I was in hospital. And it's become so common that in the UK, there are several hospitals who have got a very large research campaign going. And they're also including the Netherlands and Holland. And they found that so many patients had these experiences that they started now working very hard. And it's spreading. Quite a lot of hospitals now in this country are involved in this research.
Right. So is there proof?
Amazing.
Would you say there's proof of an afterlife, or what's the best evidence of the afterlife?
Well, I think the best evidence is that people who have been blind in life, who had near-death experiences, could describe the equipment in the hospital that surrounded where they were, and they could also tell the number on the light, on the top side of the light,
when
the hospital staff didn't even know that there was a number on the light. You know, so when you get things like this happening, then, you know, this is the proof that somebody who has never seen in their life can describe the equipment.
Right.
So I think, you know, there were so many instances of this type of thing that they began to realize that, you know, it was not imagination.
Right. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you is about suicide, because there's a lot of, it's a controversial subject, and, you know, depending on which religion you belong to, you're going to go
That's
to hell,
right.
or so what happens to suicide victims, according to your own personal experience? with them?
Well, my experience of them is that they are taken to the light to be healed. And they then come back to relearn the whatever it was. Because the interesting thing about suicides is a great many of them regret it the instant they've done it. You know, they've been in the depths of depression. And, they, you know, once they've done it, they wish they hadn't.
So, right.
But, no, they don't go to hell, and they don't have sort of everlasting regret. They do get help to move on, because the spirit does move on and learn, and, you know, it has another life. Because this is the idea, we just go on and on from one life to the next and one learning until eventually the soul has learned everything that it needs to know. So the suicides, they do go and be healed. And I've actually had messages come through to a medium from suicide that I have helped. So I know that they do move over and that they're all right. But certainly, I mean, I know some religious beliefs appear to make it almost a crime to commit suicide. But it's something which is done when the person is in the depths of depression, which is an illness.
Right.
So, you know, they're not in the normal, well-balanced state of mind.
Well, like you say, they always regret it, and they end up having to come back to relearn any lessons they
may have
missed, right?
Yes.
So, what about angels? Are angels human beings, or are they a completely different class of beings?
As far as I understand, angels are God's messengers. They have never appeared. They've never lived in Earth. They've never incarnated in Earth. And there are angels and there are archangels. Now, it's interesting because the American astronauts out of Houston have seen them and reported them in great detail. And so have the Russian cosmonauts. So, you know, there is proof that they do exist. And I know that on one of the trips, the astronauts said they were escorted for 3 days by these enormous beings that flew with them. And I understand that when one was on the moon, there was an angel hovering over him. So but it's interesting that the Americans reported it and that the Russians also reported it.
I hadn't heard of that. I've heard of UFOs, but I hadn't heard of angels.
Well, I certainly read about it. I'll try and remember, and perhaps send you an email if I can remember where I read about it. But there certainly has been proof, both the Americans and the Russians reported these beings, so they do
right.
exist. But I certainly have been helped by angels in crisis. You know, when occasions when I should have been killed. You know, I was driving down the motorway one night. And a young man came in off a slip road and wasn't looking over his shoulder and hadn't seen me level with him, and he cut straight across me. And my car, I was traveling at 70 miles an hour, which is fast, quite fast, and I had to do a U-turn in a very narrow strip of road, which my car wouldn't have been able to do. And I wouldn't have the strength to hold the wheel. And it literally turned around. Somebody grabbed the wheel and turned the car around for me. And it literally turned in its own length.
Oh, wow.
Which would have been a physical impossibility. And I had another occasion a few years ago. I had been with a friend to a car boot sale. You know, it's a sort of sale in the village green where people take along all the goods to sell. And I bought this little pram for my granddaughter. And I was in the process of opening the car door. I was in my friend's car, and I was opening the door to put this pram in and myself. And an old lady came round the corner on the wrong side of the road, hit the car door, which should have swung in and cut my legs off, but somebody held that door. So I've had one or two instances, you know, where angels have been there. And when you raise the subject, it's surprising how many people will give you an instance. You know, so it's not a one-off. There's a lot of people will tell you a tale of how an angel saved them, you know, in a situation
mm-hmm.
where something should have happened, but somehow it was avoided by some sort of some unnatural force, you know.
Right. Now, if someone is living in a haunted house, what should they do? I always tell them that they should talk to the ghost as if it were a normal person, and especially when there's activity going on, and tell them to go to the light, basically.
Yes, I mean, if you literally just say, you know, go up to the light, your friends are waiting or your family are waiting, which is true, they're all waiting up there to welcome them. If that doesn't work, then, you know, send them some healing light first of all, and then tell them, because sometimes they do need a bit of light. You know, if it's a person that's been negative or depressed when they died, then, you know, it's nice that they get some light. It sort of helps them on the way.
Right.
Now, one of the problems is sometimes there can be more than one spirit there. You know, there can be several.
Oh, no.
If it's a building that's been there a very long time, then you can get spirits from different generations that are there, in which case, you know, often they will go together.
Right.
And, you know, it's always nice to ask the angels to help them, to take them, or, you know, ask the Creator, depending on your religion.
Right. Now, what about animal spirits? Are there animal spirits? Have you ever...
Very seldom. Because, I mean, the animals don't have the hang-ups that we have. You know, they don't have all the sort of thoughts that we have that may keep us in this in-between area. You know, they just go straight through.
Right. And the
only time I've ever come across an animal is when one has stayed to be loyal to its owner, if the owner had stayed. But usually they go to a joint spirit, apart from the ones that have been very much loved. I mean, if you've had a little dog that has been part of the family, then when it dies, it will be up there waiting to welcome you.
Right. Well,
I've been at the spiritualist church when the medium has given a person a message saying, I've got this little black dog here, and the person, their eyes will fill up with tears and say, oh, that was wee Georgie. So, you know, I know that animals do wait for their owner to welcome them. But generally, you know, if it's a wild animal or an animal that wasn't part of the family, then they go to a joint spirit. I think I've probably rescued about two animals. I had one case in Scotland, because I'm a Scot, you probably hear, and I had one case in Scotland that I had to go to, and it was a very old lady who had been there since the late 1800s in this castle, and she had been the goat keeper in the castle, and for some reason she hadn't moved on, so I was asked to help. And this old lady kept talking about Mary, and I couldn't get her to go, and I thought, now, who's Mary? And then I discovered that Mary was her donkey, and that this lady wouldn't go until her donkey was coming. So I was able to solve that by getting the donkey. But I had another case where a lady contacted me who was really quite ill, because every night there was banging in her house, and she couldn't get to sleep, and this had been going on for years. And she had had people along who did feng shui, and she had to do water board, and everything she could think of to try and find out what was causing the noises. And she got my name from the British Society of Dowsers and contacted me to see if it was geopathic stress, which it wasn't. And I said to her, it sounds like a spirit. Anyway, when I linked in, I found this very old gentleman who told me that he had been the head gardener in this estate, and the lady actually lived in the cottage which had been the head gardener's cottage years before. And as far as he was concerned, this was his cottage, and he wasn't going to move. And I couldn't get this man to move at all. And I could understand, you know, this was what he thought. It was his home still. So he was there, and he had a little dog with him, a little border terrier, who had obviously been his working dog when he was alive. And in the end, to get him to move, I told him that if he went to the light, there was an absolutely succulent dinner up there for his dog, and that the lady in the house would look after the place till he got back. And he shut off to get this dinner for the dog. And that was the last of him, even if he was safely home after that. But he had his little dog. But I very seldom find an animal. So animals don't usually get trapped unless there's a reason.
Right. So Okay, well, you know, Hans Holder, he's a very famous ghost hunter. He says there's no such thing as demons, whereas Ed and Lorraine Warren say that there are. And I think
there are
controversial.
Demons.
There are?
Yes, there are. Because where you get light, you get dark.
Well, is that what a poltergeist is?
There's different beliefs about a poltergeist. I believe that where you get the poltergeist, it is the energies that are all confused, and by sorting the energies out and removing the earthbound spirits there, usually the situation is resolved. But there are people that believe it's linked to a teenager in the house.
Right.
Who, when they're going through puberty, they have strange energy problems. But I don't think that's it at all. I'm convinced it is a combination of a difficult spirit, you know, who's wanting to get away, and this powerful energy is in the site.
So is it? It's a demon.
You mentioned about demons. Now, there are spirits who have never incarnated. You know, they have never incarnated in Earth. They have always lived in the lower Earth planes, and
They
have very powerful negative energy, and they can be attracted to people who have a weak immune system. You know, perhaps people who have been in drugs and things like that.
Or who mess around with the Ouija board.
Oh, that is very bad. The Ouija board is fascinating because it is so convincing, but it's very bad because what happens is you open up to a lower vibration of energy, and it was very exciting to do, but because what you're doing is you're opening yourself up and allowing these lower vibrations in, and a lot of people who have used the Ouija board have found problems in their life. But the awful thing about it is it does tell you some correct answers which make you believe it.
Right.
You know, I always say to people, beware of it. It is not good news. And even saying a prayer of protection before you start, it still gives you the answers you want to hear, but not necessarily the answers that are the truth. I mean, I've only ever once had experience of it. And a friend of mine was having a relationship outside her marriage. And she came to my house and made up a board out of pieces of paper. And we sat there, and it was fascinating to watch. And as we asked the questions, it gave all the answers, which were exactly what this woman wanted to hear. But in actual fact, it's now 10 years since, and none of it has come true. So I think, you know, it sounds very good, and it can be very, very exciting for young people, but it is really to be avoided.
Yeah, I actually discourage it, too. Several of the cases I've investigated have started with people who have messed around using a Ouija board. And I think what happens is you're contacting spirits, as you say, who are from the lower level, and you don't even know
That's
who
right.
they are. And they'll say
That's
anything
right.
to please you. Because
yeah.
they're kind of
toying with you. I had an interesting experience. I was doing a radio program, and I was sitting opposite the presenter at this table. And when I arrived there was a Ouija board sitting on the desk, and I said, why have you got this Ouija board here?
Oh, no.
Because I feel quite strongly about them. And he said, oh, well, on yesterday's program, I was trying to contact John Lennon on the Ouija board. And I thought, oh, dear. But this DJ had actually been trying on the air to present, to get through to John Lennon, which it's not a good thing to teach your listeners, but there you go.
right. Well, I did do table lifting once with an experienced physical
yes.
medium.
Yeah, that's interesting.
If you work with someone who's experienced with this, it's much safer, I think.
Oh, yes. I have actually done this. I went to a meeting in London where there's probably about 50-odd people, and there was a lot of tables, and it ended up the whole room, all these tables moving around with each of us holding a corner. Now,
oh, wow.
this is literally just using energy. So I don't think there's any harm in table lifting. But then I think anything that you do, you should put a protection around you before you do it.
Right.
And I feel very strongly about protection.
How do you do psychic protection?
Well, there's a lot of different ways that you can do it. I mean, the most simple way is just to visualize a white light around you. What I do is I visualize a bubble of white light and jump into it and rip it up. So I'm surrounded by white light.
Right.
You see, a lot of people don't realize that their aura gets very dirty. And the aura is the energy field around the body. And that's where negativity starts off. Before it gets too into the body, it starts off with the aura. So it's quite important to cleanse your aura each day. And this can be done literally by visualizing yourself under a waterfall or just washing white light down round about it. I mean, it's just one or two seconds job to do. But it's quite important. And you do feel a lot better. Because if you go to a supermarket for shopping and the person standing next to you has had a row with their wife or husband, that negativity that they're giving off lands in your aura. And anywhere else you happen to be that's negative, it lands. So sometimes you come home and you feel tired and you wonder why you're tired. And of course, it's because your aura needs cleansing. And it's quite amazing how by cleansing your aura, you feel so much better.
Right. Well, Wilma, we're approaching the end of our hour. So,
yes. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been very, very interesting. Your book, Spirit Rescue.
Yes.
A Simple Guide to Talking with Ghosts and Freeing Earthbound Spirits. I have a review here I want to read to everyone, which is on Amazon. Let me just read it real quickly. This book is a must for anyone who has discovered a gift for communicating with the spirit world or who has simply found herself asking questions about what it's all about. And Wilma Davidson's groundbreaking account of her experience as a spirit rescuer, you can forget the images of fear and mystery that the subject usually engenders. Prepare instead for a book where you feel like you're chatting with a good friend. It's original and fascinating stuff. Wilma has obviously researched the subject comprehensively and offers some very relevant and well-chosen books for further reading. In fact, this book is over-brimming with pertinent facts and anecdotes about life and life after life. It is reassuring, fun, and full of optimism and wisdom. It is also very good on protection and how to ensure that you're working with a good positive energy, whatever your walk of life or line of trade. I just felt after reading it that a book could be made from every chapter, and I'm looking forward to see what she brings out next. So that's a great review. So what are you bringing out next? Do you have another book?
I'm bringing a book on dancing next.
Oh, how exciting.
Yes, it's going to be published at the end of August, so it won't be long. And I'm very excited about it because it will open up a whole new world for a lot of people.
Very, very nice.
Yes,
well,
it means that people can... Yeah?
Our hour is pretty much up. So I want to thank you very much for coming onto the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm now suddenly wide awake.
That's right. Thank you for getting up so early. 5 a.m. Yikes. I want to thank you for that.
Wow, it was a pleasure. I hope I can come back again and talk about my dancing book.
Oh, yeah, I hope so. Please give me an email or whatever when it comes out.
Yes, I will. Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, that's been our show tonight, folks. I want to thank you all for listening. Our guest has been Wilma Davidson, and we've been talking about her book, Spirit Rescue, A Simple Guide to Talking with Ghosts and Freeing Earthbound Spirits. I hope you've all enjoyed it as much as I have. I hope you can join us next week when we talk to Shelley Yates about a near-death experience and a message for humanity. Until then, thank you all, and have a great evening.